Good afternoon, everybody. Joe Boma here with another Grit City story. Today I have Julia Berg of the Seaport. You might know it as the Foss Waterway Seaport Museum, but it is just the Seaport. How are you doing today, Julia?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for having me here in this lovely, lovely museum. Can you start off a little bit just telling me how it came to be?
Sure. So the museum building itself is actually the Balfour Dock Building originally, which was part of a 1 mile long wheat warehouse.
Oh, wow.
That was, at one time was the largest wheat warehouse in the world. This is the only remaining original part of the structure that's left. The other parts were lost to fire or demolished over the years. One of the reasons that our building still survived is where you may have seen the big glass wall in the front of the building. That was a firewall. And so this section survived some of the other things that happened down here. And there's actually an exhibit down here if you come visit called the Balfour Dock Exhibit. In the exhibit, you can see a lot of photos of the building and the wheat warehouse, how it was originally, and then also pictures of the restoration. When it began, I believe in 1994 is when the decision was made to turn it into the what used to be called the Working Waterfront Museum.
Okay.
And then the actual restoration of the building, I think, was in 2011. Yeah, so in 2011 is when they dismantled the brick firewall and put in the glass. But before that, they had already shored up the dock that was falling in and replaced all those wooden beams with concrete. So there's no wood left underneath the building at all anymore.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, it's all supported by concrete. And of course, because it was a historic restoration, any original part of the building couldn't be changed. So that's why, for example, this wall wasn't able to be modified, but some of the other walls were.
Yeah.
So the only reason we were able to take out the firewall is that was added a few years after the original construction of the building.
Okay.
So it wasn't considered original. So that's why it was able to be removed and replaced with the glass.
So
but yeah.
So that's why we have all these incredible beams that just span the length of the building still.
So the building was built by the Northern Pacific Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Probably should have started with that.
It's okay.
So this is going back, so this is the terminus, right?
Yes.
Back in the day, it was like, where is the Trans-Pacific Railroad going to end? And there was stiff competition, right?
Yes.
Between, what, Seattle, Port Townsend, Bellingham was in the mix, Tacoma. That's why they all have these turn-of-the-century real estate booms, where they have these cute, now little downtown brick areas where everybody was speculating. So Tacoma won, good job Tacoma, and of course became the terminus. And that's when this building was built as part of that.
Yep.
So if you've ever seen the show Downton Abbey, I don't know if
you're... Unfortunately.
No?
I've seen all the memes. I haven't seen the show yet.
Yeah, so in Downton Abbey, the whole premise of the show is that the aristocracy in England is in decline because of American wheat has basically priced them out of the market.
Okay.
And so he marries an American woman, too, and then that spawns the whole thing.
Yep.
So Tacoma actually had quite a bit to do with that because all of that American wheat was coming right here out of this wheat warehouse and contributed, sadly, to the decline of the system that was going there in Europe. So there's a little Downton Abbey tie into Tacoma for you.
Oh, that's fun. It's also the rail to sail that everyone says about Tacoma.
Rails to sails.
The real terminus.
Right. So we had the sails. This is, you're standing in the terminus. And
yes.
You can still see, of course, the railroad tracks right there.
Yep.
And then the ships pulled in right here. So we're literally standing in the building that was a big part of it all. Stuff came in on one side, went out the other side. Now, that didn't last for too long. And this building has had several other things in it. The Young Love Grocery, that for a number of years, and then as the building fell further and further into decline, then it was used for, I believe, a police impound.
Oh, wow.
And when the early days of what became the Foss Waterway Seaport, we only had a portion of the building, and the rest of it was still police impound. And there's a lot of fun stories from those days.
I can imagine. Taking some fun cars for a joyride or boats for a nice little water tour real quick.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, here's a cool thing. Okay, so we're in the North Hall right now, and I'm going to take you over to a part of the building that used to be wooden, of course, most of it was a wooden pier.
Yes, yes.
And then some of it was concrete. So the wooden pier is all gone. There's actually a section of it behind the front desk right there.
Oh, yes, that's what that is.
Okay. Yeah, that's what that is. So that's awesome. A piece of the building that was salvaged. So if you come down and visit, you can see that. It smells like creosote. Hard to fix. So there used to be, and I've taken me 2 years to figure this out, but if you go into the North Hall and you stand right about on one of these social distancing signs, you are standing in the spot that used to have a hatch in the floor.
Really?
There's much about the hatch. Oh, the hatch.
Okay.
People denied its existence for about 18 months. I've been here going on 3 years, and it took me tracking down a lot of people to finally, I have verified the existence of our hatch.
Okay.
With photos, finally, that someone had taken. Our previous education director, Jan Adams, shared with me photos right before the dock was demolished and replaced with the existing cement. And so the hatch was over the water.
Okay.
So
quick escape from the museum?
Rum running.
Oh, even better.
Smuggling of all types of things, maybe people, because you could completely, if the tide was right, you could come in under the dock. Yeah. Remember, this was a mile-long dock. Nobody would see you. And then you could pop up through the hatch right into the warehouse. And the hatch was actually inside of a small room inside of the warehouse.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to go as far as to call it a secret room, because,
yep,
you know, it's right there.
Yeah.
But it was near what looked like a boiler. And these were the original offices for the museum was in that area with the hatch.
Huh. Interesting.
So I don't think it's something that was really open to the public, but I do have photos that I can share with you.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah, that show it. So that's one of my secret finds. There's no basement. But there was a secret hatch that dropped onto the water.
No basement into the ocean?
Come on. Yeah, we're standing over the water right now on the Theofoss Waterway. So a lot of people think that we're associated, because we're called the Foss Waterway Seaport, I think they're associated with Foss Maritime Tugs. We're a great company, but we have no association whatsoever. We're only called the Foss Waterway Seaport because of our location.
Noted.
So you can see we do have a small exhibit dedicated to Theofoss, who also is may or may not be known to haunt the building.
That's another story.
That's a whole other story. Casually
not gloss over.
Yeah. So you can, Pretty Gritty Tours, who's one of our partners on a lot of our virtual tours, offers ghost tours, which you can book. And I don't want to steal his thunder, because he can tell you about all of the incidents, of which there are many, down here quite frequently. This building is very creepy at night, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Good to know.
Probably
even better now that it's not a mile long, so Thea can just kind of, save on her cardio.
We have some interesting things with the heating, where certain areas turn cold when others are warm. We have one of her original skiffs here in the museum, and then we also have three replicas that are right when you walk in the front door that were built by our Heritage Boat Shop, which has undergone a massive remodel, and we'll go back there a little bit later.
Sounds great.
So one of the things about working in a facility like this is that, first of all, the building is so incredible. Honestly, it just never gets old. Looking up at the trusses and the way the light hits. Which makes us a great and really unique place for events.
Yes,
we have a lot of weddings here, a lot of receptions, meetings, and that's, of course, a big way that the museum is our main source of revenue to keep things open as a museum during the other hours, because admission is not a big moneymaker for a facility like this. So, yeah, it surprises me, but I still find things that I never really noticed. And because things get moved around, and all of a sudden this boat came closer to my area, which is, I'm actually the marine science director. And so,
on top of education,
on top of everything else, it's a nonprofit.
Many hats.
So, this little skiff was made from a log canoe. So, in 1904, Louis Mogen, how do you think my pronunciation is there?
I'm going to say it's correct.
Louis Mogen, maybe he was French. Louis Mogen, I apologize. A gentleman bought a log canoe from a passing ship, which would have been, at that time, there would have been many of such canoes used for transport. And so then later on, in the spirit which I appreciate, which is to rejuvenate something instead of throw it away. They added onto the top of the log canoe a whole nother boat. So yes, it's very cool. It's a canoe and a double-ended skiff built together. It's really kind of indescribable. You're just going to have to come see it for yourself.
Yeah, definitely a fun little piece of Tacoma's maritime quirkiness.
Yeah, and so just opening tonight, it's our third Thursday.
Third Thursday, okay.
Is our Woody and Wheels exhibit.
As we putz over there, can you describe the Third Thursday events?
Right, so Third Thursday is an event throughout Tacoma where from 4 to 8 o'clock, a lot of the museums are free.
Oh,
and so some museums, you know, we do varying things. So we've been known to have free beer and wine sometimes. We've been known to do entire events. Most recently, we have a virtual series that Chris from Pretty Pretty Tours handles for us. So him and I work together, and we've covered everything from rails to sails to the wreck of the Ondelena, which is right out here.
Okay.
Just we can almost see it. It's the biggest maritime disaster in Tacoma's history.
Oh, love to hear more on that later.
Yes, we will talk more about that later. So right here, we're standing in front of a car inside of a maritime museum.
Yes, kind of curious.
Yeah, it's a cool car. It's a partnership with America's Car Museum.
Yep.
And so arriving any day now is the other half, which is a Chris Craft that's going to be towed by this
original Woody station.
Yeah, so Woody, and it's apparently this was the last year that they built them with actual wood, which I thought was really interesting. Yeah, so we've had a beautiful Chris Craft. As you can tell, I'm more into the boats than the car.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and it's going to be towing it. Okay. So just like it would have happened potentially on their way to the boat ramp. So they're working on a custom trailer for that. And that will be coming by the end of the month.
And I can't tell if it's 40s or early 50s, but it's got all the chrome, all the headlights, white-walled wheels. This, you know, Kyle Lover's dream. And I'm sure the cruising boat behind it will be just as
they're
beautiful.
They're both from the same year in the early 50s.
Ah, that's close.
Yeah.
So close.
Yeah, you did. I think that's pretty good. Now, before the pandemic, we had a lot more hands-on things in here for those of you with families. You know, they come and they go, so no promises on what's out. But we do have one boat, or technically three boats, that people can climb on. The one that most people visit is called Faith, which is a fishing trawler right by the restrooms. And very popular with the younger set. They can put on a life jacket and drive the, you know, turn the wheel. And we have that sanitized by our docents frequently throughout the day. We also have a Vagabond 14, which was donated by the Tacoma Yacht Club, and you can come here and raise the sails and pull on the jib sheet and try out the tiller, and that is also located near the restrooms for people to play on.
I gotta say, born and raised in Boston, you have to learn how to sail in your youth. It's just kind of, you know, one of those rules. I have spent many hours on small sailboats like this, flipped upside down or on the side, you know.
I know, this one's
turning it the wrong way.
Quite friendly to the ground.
Much better experience.
I just moved it a few weeks ago. It was over by the whale, and so we had to drop the mast. It was quite I hadn't done that since, I was about 14. Everybody's like, how do you do this? I'm like, I don't know. I think you just, you know, and it went fine.
Yeah, just pull the pin, see what happens.
Yeah, that's basically, we try not to drop it on anything expensive like that car.
Yep, nope, good ideas, good
but
ideas.
Yeah,
all
no, right. it all went fine.
All the fun of maritime learning.
Yeah. If you go into the restrooms, there's a bunch of blown up photos on the wall that talks about the early mosquito fleet. And so these are some of my actual favorite photos in the museum. And we have some more in the Mosquito Fleet exhibit.
Okay.
Which you can't miss, next to Faith, there's an antique motors exhibit full of all kinds of interesting outboards. Through time. And most of them do run, although, you know, you have to catch them. I've never seen them run. I just know I know who maintains them, and I know they all do. Maybe if we ever get back to festivals again, we'll break them out.
That'd be fun.
I always
mix and match an outboard to a boat in the museum and see what happens.
The boats in the museum are beautiful. I mean, they're works of art. And I sometimes, some of them especially, I feel like I'm going to the pound and all the dogs are locked up. And I want to put all the boats in the water and just sail them around.
Say, off the top of your head, how many boats do you actually have here?
It changes all the time.
Okay.
So we're actually, one of the things about a museum is we don't want it to become old and dusty and stale.
Yes, exactly.
And then if you've been here once, then you've seen everything and you have no reason to come back. So as we come out of the pandemic, we are bringing in new exhibits all the time, such as the Wood on Wheels, and making room for new and exciting things. So some of the boats that don't necessarily line up with our mission will be coming onto the market fairly soon or available at our auction.
Wow.
So I'll tell you if you can use that.
Sounds good. Looking forward to placing a bid or two, and we'll surely get outbid.
We are now moving towards the south end of the building, past the antique motors. We are in the Mosquito Fleet exhibit. So the Seaport was fortunate to acquire the entire Bill Summers collection, which came from an incredible museum called the Museum of Puget Sound at Stretch Island. So Bill Summers, who I wish I had been able to meet, spent his time in retirement going around and collecting pieces of the Mosquito Fleet as it was being dismantled.
Oh, wow.
So both out on the floor and in our collections,
yep,
which you can see if you book a private tour with Pretty Gritty Tours, behind the wall there, we have a huge collection of original Mosquito Fleet artifacts. And if you're not familiar with the Mosquito Fleet, that is just the name for all the boats that were used to transport goods and people, really before the car ferry system came into effect.
Yep.
So if there's many maps, so there were both the Mosquito Fleet ferries, which is the first thing we think about, which there was a route from here to Seattle, for example.
Okay.
I live over near the Hood Canal. There used to be a ferry that came down there and picked people up. I mean, how cool would that be?
Really convenient.
Yeah, we don't have that anymore. But it's called the Mosquito Fleet because at some point in history, someone looked out onto the Sound and said, oh, all those boats swarming. It looks like mosquitoes.
All the original names that stick.
Yeah, so there's not any necessarily definition of a Mosquito Fleet boat. It could be anything as long as it was transporting goods or people. It wouldn't be a recreational boat, for example.
Yeah, makes sense. There's just some beautiful examples in the models you have, just small little steamers and even a couple of paddle wheels, it looks like.
Yeah, so here, this says Mosquito Fleet, the ferry fleet. So a lot of people, they just think about the ferries. And there's some maps in the exhibit. So this is, I mean, it just went everywhere, right?
Yeah.
The water, you couldn't get around through the woods then, or trees in your way, big, gigantic trees. So similar to, you know, how it was before colonization.
Before I-5 ruined everything.
Right. Well, and before white people came here, there was, you know, everybody's always gotten around using the water. So we have most of our exhibit centers around the Mosquito Fleet ferries.
Okay.
And so we have a very cool story that is quietly just on a small plaque here. I've done a couple of online presentations about it that you can find on our YouTube. So Captain W.C. Johnson and his friend were boys on Dash Point, grew up here in Tacoma, and they looked out over Puget Sound, and they saw all these Mosquito Fleet ferries going by.
Yep.
And they built hundreds of cardboard models, just a few of which we have on display.
Yeah, so only a couple dozen just at a quick glance.
Yeah, and so these are, you know, how these boats looked at the time period. Captain Johnson fought in World War II. Captain Johnson became a prisoner of war.
Oh, wow.
And created some incredible art when he was in a prison camp in Japan.
Yeah.
That is actually, some of it is at Mohai, and some of it we have here.
Yeah.
In fact, a number of years ago, we acquired some more from someone just wandering up to the door, giving us a whole bin of this. He was just an incredible artist.
So that's the best kind of person to come knocking on the door.
Yeah, yeah. You meet a lot of amazing people in a place like this.
Yeah.
But so I'm hoping to do a special exhibit someday just on Captain Johnson's art.
Yeah.
But that's a really unique story.
Yeah, definitely.
That we're able to tell here. And it goes with our Mosquito Fleet artifacts.
Yeah, between the Mosquito Fleet, you also have some pistons that are like 8 feet tall and steering wheels that are 6 feet tall. Just all sorts of massive pieces of nautical history.
The bigger
back
the better, right?
Exactly.
So this is the steam engine, which is very cool. And I'm actually in the process of rebuilding a diesel engine on my boat right now. And my mechanic is desperate to come. Get a look at this baby.
Just throw this on.
Yeah, so it's one of the last remaining pieces of the Moonlight, okay. which was the last coal-burning tugboat on the Pacific coast.
That's cool.
Maybe one day we'll fire it up. We also have some really cool larger ship models.
Yeah.
So the Beaver, there's a model here right by the outboards and the steam engine, which is generally considered to be one of the first boats of the Mosquito fleet, or the first boat. I don't like to use anything, you know, necessarily yeah. say it was the first, but generally considered. So this sailed into the Columbia River in 1836, becoming the first steamship on the Pacific coast. And it ran freight and passengers between Fort Vancouver and Fort Nisqually. And then, of course, eventually went the way of many of these old ships, basically became wrecked outside of Vancouver, B.C., remains there to this day in its parts.
I gotta say, I do kind of have like this morbid fascination with old ships, because it seems every history is, and it served beautifully for 30 or 50 years, and then sunk dramatically and disappeared.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Broke up on the coast. Like, did anyone ever just retire one? No?
Okay. Well, there's a few Mosquito Fleet boats still in operation.
Okay.
One cool. goes between Port Orchard and Bremerton and is a foot ferry. And then there's also the Virginia 5 in Seattle.
Okay.
Is part of, but yeah, most of them, unfortunately, although they were built to last, the sea and the weather gets the best.
So
speaking of, here's our little exhibit on the Kalakala. Anybody from around here is very familiar with.
Can we say that three times fast?
Yes, Kalakala. Yes. Kalakala,
Kalakala. Kalakala.
So
okay.
this was a car ferry, but one of the early car ferries. Very cool Art Deco.
Looks like it's a Jetson car ferry.
Yeah. So local effort to save this boat was huge and unfortunately did not succeed. But we do have one piece of it right here.
Yeah, a big Art Deco window.
Yes, you can find pieces of the Kalakala all over. We also have our exhibit here in the corner. It talks about the early colonization of this region and has some very beautiful models of the ships, European explorers.
And just for a few listeners out there, when we say models of ships, these aren't what you built with your parents on the kitchen table. These things are like 6 to 10 feet long. They're in-depth models.
Scale is on there, I'd say it's like 1/32nd or something. Yeah. They're pretty big.
Yeah. Pocket-sized cannons. All right.
Although these, we get these out and use them at events. These are real cannons. They're very loud.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. We fire across at, you know, urban waters. In the middle of the museum, we have an exhibit that was built as a collaboration with the Puyallup tribe, which we're very proud of, and talks about a lot of the history in the region, including about fisheries and some of the early decisions and how they affected this area. We are on the unceded land of the Puyallup people here at the Fast Water Way Seaport, and we begin every education program with a land acknowledgement.
Seeing the history of their tribe here kind of splayed out is really cool, and admittedly I tried the pronunciation challenge, I'll call it, on the board, and even in my household of six languages, not a single one of us stood a chance.
There's a really neat website that you can access through the Puyallup Tribe's website where you can learn the language and
awesome.
Learn about, and also in the exhibit you can push some buttons and hear some of the pronunciation.
Exactly, that's what we called the Puyallup challenge, and it did not go well.
Didn't go well.
I'm not going to offend anybody by trying to say it out loud again.
So we have a partnership. Well, we are working with the Puyallup tribe right now, and we're raising salmon.
Okay.
You can see over in the corner, we have a salmon program here.
And
we have tanks in 12 Tacoma elementary schools right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
All with salmon donated from the Puyallup tribal hatcheries.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be releasing those at Swan Creek in March. And we also have a tank in the Puyallup Tribal Elementary School. So we've been honored to be able to go up there and teach some over the recent months.
Definitely.
Ooh, you can't talk about maritime history without talking about the history of scuba diving.
All the fun.
So this exhibit is actually a private collection from one of our board members, Ryan Spence.
This is a heck of a collection, I will say.
It's pretty cool, and it's only a small part of his collection.
It's just with your private diving bell and 3 dozen helmets and tanks.
Yeah, here, come on in, the water's fine.
Oh, gonna wash my head on this one.
We're inside the diving, or a replica of a diving bell, And I'll tell you, I've done a lot of crazy things, but I don't think I would have ridden one of these to the bottom.
Yeah, nah, I have too much of a love of oxygen, I've been told.
The spirit of exploration, but there's some great illustrations in here.
For those of you who don't know, a diving bell is basically an open bottom barrel that you just kind of sink in, and there's an oxygen bubble underneath, so not terrifying at all for those of you who are claustrophobic.
And then we also have a old diving apparatus. So when people used to dive with diving helmets, so after the, you know, involving the diving bell, it was even worse.
Yeah.
You put the strap, this metal thing to your head, put lead weights in your shoes, and you know, suited up with a giant dive belt.
100% OSHA approved.
Yeah, to take you to the bottom, and then your life was completely dependent on the person at the top turning a crank on this apparatus that we have here that would provide pressurized air to the helmet. And a lot of people died using these.
Yeah.
Including right out here on the wreck of the Ondelena. So when the Ondelena went down on, of course, Friday the 13th, although technically early Saturday morning. So they came in here, and this was a four-masted steel bark, I believe.
Okay.
So she came in right here.
Mm-hmm.
Offloaded all of her cargo and then went back out to anchor out for the night. So the ship was very light with no ballast. And
makes
so
sense.
What they did was chain the ship to log booms.
Okay.
And at that time there had been difficulty keeping crew aboard. And so the crew was all on board. It was a small crew because
yep.
a lot of them had just gotten off because they'd had a really rough passage. So all the crew that hadn't abandoned
I say
was
not a good employment opportunity
on board the ship. And except for one person
okay.
who had gone ashore to be treated at a hospital. So he was not off. But so sometime in the night, a gale came up and
yep.
the chains broke. The ship turned over and sank with everybody aboard in the
oh,
harbor.
Wow.
And we know that they were aboard because they had been being locked inside so that people wouldn't jump over and swim to shore in the night to try to abandon. So we
no
believe,
one wanted to be on the ship that badly that they locked the crew on board.
Yeah, we believe that the ship went down with all hands. No bodies were ever found.
Oh,
and
wow.
the next morning, the ship was just gone. So at first, they started looking around
yeah.
other places, like in boats, and they didn't find it. It wasn't anywhere. So eventually, they started dragging the bottom and then snagged it. And so they were never able to recover anything except for
oh.
a diver did was able to bring up a piece of wood
mm-hmm.
from the railings in like the 50s, which was made into gavels that are around. There's a small piece of a porthole that the
yep.
Washington State History Museum has. But yeah,
okay.
this is, they always talk about the curse.
Yeah.
In our research, I was able to reach out to a museum of the occult, of course, in Belgium. And they had obtained letters that were sent home from a crew member
oh,
during
wow.
the voyage of the Ondelena, which came to
yep.
Seattle many times
okay.
over from China, bringing stuff
huh.
here to the warehouse.
Yeah.
And so we've translated some of them, and they're absolutely incredible, including the last letters
oh,
before of the last voyage before it sank here.
Let's give goosebumps to...
Yeah,
guys.
So they talk about the curse quite a bit in the letters, and you know, I'm not saying one way or the other, but so it reminded me when we were talking about this dive pump,
yep.
because the one diver that did reach it, there was a huge salvage operation. The families wanted closure,
mm-hmm.
you know, they wanted something,
yeah.
anything, and so, but they couldn't, it's been hard to find,
yeah.
mysteriously, this giant metal ship. Seems
huh.
to be very difficult to find. It's been moved around, dragged around.
Yeah.
And the diver, one of the divers that went down to try to find it was using one of these and died in a horrible way that we won't talk about, using one
okay.
of these crank metal.
Nope.
The next diver that found it died of a heart attack.
Oh, good.
And so everybody talks about the curse. I've tried to scan it several times with sonar, and there's either been fog or the boat breaks or... So, I give up.
So, I cannot endorse anyone going on themselves trying to find the wreck at the end of the
Well, nobody knows where it is.
Ah, even better.
Yeah, we do have a location, but it hasn't been made public.
And then my
podcast. I know where it is.
And then my podcast cut off mysteriously.
Yeah, and then, so if you have internet problems when you're editing this or your computer suddenly breaks, I apologize, but I can refer you to Pretty Gritty Tours that has done with us in partnership
yep.
several episodes about the wreck of the Ondelena,
okay.
heavily focusing on the curse because it's kind of, you know,
yeah.
makes it more exciting. But
yeah.
the facts are, it definitely sank, it's definitely out there, And someday, maybe somebody will, you know, it's a time capsule. It's a perfect time capsule of that era, probably preserved in the silt almost perfectly.
That would be incredible.
So according to the recovery experts that I've talked to.
Yeah.
So someday when the technology gets good enough, I'm sure we'll see the Ondolina again.
Oh, that'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Got to think about that poor, well, not poor, I guess, but the dude who was on shore getting surgery or seeing the doctor just showing up the next day and like, guys, what's my
right.
boat?
So there's some interviews with him. You can learn all about it in the podcast. They have the letters. We know quite a bit about it, including having talked to some of the descendants of the people that didn't survive.
Oh, wow.
And their stories as well. So anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
We're back in the Cousteau. We're still in the diving exhibit. You can't,
yep.
Yeah, diving always makes me think of Ondolina because that's the only way to get there now. A lot of people don't know that Jacques Cousteau visited Tacoma. And there's actually a picture of his ship passing under the Narrows Bridge.
Arguably the most famous... diver in the world.
Yeah.
Of all time.
And there is, this is the third boat that you can climb on, is this little Cousteau ship back here. You can do the Titanic thing. Yeah.
Never let go, Jeff.
Some of the back corners of the museum are under construction right now, but there is what remains of an exhibit about cleanup effort that took place because the Theophos Waterway in Commencement Bay was a very, very toxic site, which was capped. So there's some interesting information about that back here.
So I used to live right next to the Glass Museum, actually. So when I first moved here, a lot of people had moved before it got cleaned up. Like, wait, you live next to the Glass Museum? Are you living in sewage or from the riverbank? Are you okay? It's like, no, it's beautiful
it's
now.
Good
trust
now.
Me. It
it's
looks
good
great.
Now.
There's museums, there's apartments, it's nice.
Right. We also have a very large connection. We also have a very large collection of Willits Brothers canoes. So if you're from Tacoma, you're familiar with the Willits Brothers who created these absolutely incredible hand-built boats. And we have both the canoes, and then we have a very rare launch here as well.
Yeah.
Again, two brothers over on Day Island, and they used a jig to construct these boats, which is kind of think of it like a mold that holds it.
Yeah.
So every single nail in every single one of these boats is placed in the exact same spot.
That is
they were incredible.
Both tedious and incredibly impressive.
Incredible craft.
Yeah, the precision on these boats even... Like, what are they, like a century old? They look incredible.
They're just gorgeous. Yeah, so some of them had sailing rigs. This particular one is from a camp.
Oh, wow.
Most of these are just on loan to us.
Okay.
Most of the boats here are on loan.
Okay.
I had a gentleman come in one time that said he had sailed, he had been a camp counselor, and had sailed one of these in his youth, and was telling me all about it, how they came from the camp.
Also, they still look water-worthy today.
Oh, yeah, they are. These ones in particular, because it's a double type of planking.
Yep.
I mean, all wooden boats, when you throw them back in, they're dried out, so they have to swell up a little bit. But these are good to go.
Awesome. Where are we breaking into?
So we're breaking into our Heritage Boat Shop, which has just in the process of reopening. It's kind of a room within the museum now.
Yeah.
It's totally sealed. It's pretty much soundproof.
Yep.
And there is a dust collection system so that when they're doing varnish and dust, it doesn't come out to the artifacts.
Much better
so
than my
clean,
wood shop.
Yeah, right. There's a clean room over on that side when they need to do varnish, and then there's this. So this, they just told me that this boat right here, which I was actually going to take in the 7048, is called a Ruth Wherry. It's a skinned boat that they've been building in here. It's just gorgeous. And this is going to be available at auction soon. It's a Dave Gentry design. It's a skin-on frame rowboat. And I believe this is going to be set up with a sliding seat. So it's very, very light.
Yeah, so you see the beautiful wooden frame right now without the skin. And it's just, you could cruise in this thing.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it's ready for skinning pretty soon. So they build small boats in here. They do some repairs. And we're really looking forward to getting some community boat building and programs coming in here soon.
Yeah, and I see a lot of vices and beams and all sorts of old-fashioned tools. Is this more historical boat building and refurbishment, or is it just kind of whatever they feel like?
No, they do use modern methods, epoxy, screws.
Yeah.
It's both. You know, if they're restoring an old boat, they'll use... It is wooden boat building, certainly.
Very traditional.
When we have students come to the museum for field trips, I always make sure that they get some time in here.
Yeah.
If they're younger elementary school students, a lot of times we'll give them a block of wood and teach them about sanding, and then they make it into a little boat they take with them. Sand with the grain, kids.
Yeah.
And then for older students, we have some other things. But.
Manual labor, the best kind of field trip.
That's right. Well, they get to take their boat home with them.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, we end up with a whole little marina of boats. It's very cute.
That is cute.
We have, this is a 45,000 square foot building, so a lot of it's open to the public, but we also have offices and a big meeting room.
Yep.
I have a science classroom back in the corner.
Oh, cool.
And there's storage.
And you also have a mini aquarium, we'll call it. I know you briefly mentioned the salmon, but it looks like there's a bunch of other wildlife going on there.
Yeah, so the museum, the fast water receipt for it, there's really kind of five pieces.
Okay.
There's the museum,
yep.
Which is what we've been talking about a lot today.
Yep.
There's the working boat shop.
Yep.
There is the science education program, marine science,
yep.
Which is most of what my job is.
Okay.
So we take students out on boats.
Oh, yeah.
We have a kayak program.
Oh, that's awesome.
Where students from Hilltop Heritage come every day in the morning for 2 9-week sessions, and they kayak and do environmental education both.
Oh, wow.
We work with charter boats in the area to take, our goal is to get every seventh grader in Tacoma out on the water next year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have like adult education opportunities?
We do. So every quarter we do a 21 and over adult night, and then we also do family education. Unfortunately, a lot of the in-person programs haven't been running. But both with, basically, if it has to do with the water, we have in some way we're involved. So we have the science program, the boat shop, the museum. We have our events, right? We're an event center, like I mentioned, for weddings and meetings and that type of thing. And then we also have our moorage, 1,200 feet of linear dock. That's managed by the seaport out in front of the building.
There you go.
So boaters can come here, and the first 4 hours are free. And then after that, you pay up to a maximum of 7 days. And then we also have, because we were built by the Northern Pacific Railroad, we're also we have a train exhibit. It's under refurbishment right now, but we do have some really amazing model trains and explanations of the terminus.
Awesome.
And we're actually going to be hosting a huge custom train exhibit March, right around Third Thursday,
they're going to be
setting up in here, and it's going to be up Wednesday, I think, through Saturday. We're working with one of the local train groups, so that's going to be a family-focused event.
Awesome.
We have Windjammer Week is coming.
That was my elementary school mascot.
Oh, yeah?
The Windjammers, you know.
So we have many of the tall ships from around the region coming in June 25th, and they're leaving from here for a race up to Fort Townsend.
Oh,
so they're
going
to be offering public sails all week.
That'll be so much fun.
And none of this has been announced yet. I'm giving you the...
I got the scoop.
This is the scoop on what I'm working on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Trains. Windjammer Week, and then we'll be offering lots of day camps this summer too for education opportunities. You can always check our website. We just had a new website debut last week.
Nice.
And none of the education information is on there yet. But Facebook, social media. Yeah, do you have any questions?
No, this has been absolutely incredible. And it's literally everything from bring your boat up to the dock, walk on in, and you can see the nautical history of Tacoma, Pacific Northwest, from the Puyallup tribe to the modern day. See them building boats, and like you said, all the science of the sea, from motors to the ocean life to diving, is pretty much everything you covered.
We're open Thursday through Sunday most weeks. Always check to make sure we're not closed for an event. Other pandemic related concerns,
all those fun little things.
You can call or check our social media, but we welcome visitors. We do have discounts for seniors. You can find that on our website and student
home. Thank you. This has been absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we have lots of stuff going on.
Oh,
you like our whale?
I do.
Want to see the babies?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So these are fish from Fish and Wildlife, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Yep.
They're about a week older.
Aww.
And
such
we raised them from
guys.
Eggs. I know, aren't they cute? And these are fish from the Puyallup tribe.
Okay, cool.
So we have two different tanks going this year, trying different things. But they're all doing really well. And then we have touch tanks here as well. So these are freshwater.
Okay.
And then these are our saltwater touch tanks.
Okay.
And if you come down here for the Tacoma Night Market, which we have here a few nights a month, we try we always have the tanks try to dose them during the brunch markets.
Yep.
You can see they have lids on them right now. Because of course we can't have people just sticking their hands in.
Yeah, especially during brunch time.
But the lids are clear, so you can see the animals and learn about them.
Yeah, you got some anemones and starfish, and I honestly probably
can't. Some regular fish, sea cucumbers, sea urchins.
Cool.
And then we have a program where we send out brine shrimp and algae kits to every fifth grader in Tacoma.
Oh, cool.
This is our second year doing it. It's called Brainy Briny. So they they get these bags. They're actually breast milk storage bags that we came up with. And then we can inflate them like this.
Yeah.
And it becomes a little beaker.
Oh, that's
because
cool.
It's too expensive to send out jars.
Yeah.
They can't put them in their backpack. And so they get a little vial of algae and a little bit of brine shrimp and some salt, and they raise sea monkeys, brine shrimp, in these bags, and they eat the algae, and it's a totally closed system. And they get to be adults, and they keep their bags for a couple of months, and then they can come down here and set them free.
To live there.
Yeah, there's a
brine shrimp lives.
All the education programs that we do meet science, or mostly science standards that are timely for that grade.
Awesome.
So they're studying how energy moves through a system. So the brine shrimp eat the algae and get bigger.
There you go.
Test scores through the roof.
Look at that. Museum's helping the students of Tacoma with fish.
During the pandemic, we couldn't do field trips anymore.
Yeah.
And so we reached out to our connections with the public schools and said, you know, what can we do?
Yeah.
And they said, what we really need is science for students to do at home. So we put our mind to it and have put out thousands and thousands and thousands of kits and driven them to students' houses and around, and to make sure that everybody gets one, even our online students.
That is incredible. Thank you for supporting the community.
It's been a mission. Well, thank you to our funders for supporting us to support our community. That's our dock there. And then this big wall.
And the tanker banging a Yui out there.
I'm pretty excited for June when this is just full of tall ships. We do have one come in.
Yeah.
So we'll have like the Lady Washington will come in and do tours. The Adventurist comes in, but this time we're hoping to have quite a few. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities. So if you buy a ticket to the museum, that will give you the opportunity to walk on any of the boats at the dock.
If
you want to go sailing with them, you have to buy that separately.
And that was a great tour through the seaport, or the Foss Waterway seaport. There's a museum here. There's some docks here. There is a ton of exhibits and classrooms and a boat refurbishment and building center. There's so much more here than meets the eye. So thank you very much. That was Julia Berg, the Director of Education, who definitely educated me and hopefully all you on all the incredible stuff down here. This has been Joe Boma with another Grit City story.